Thank you, Jennifer. Beautiful, beautiful. You know, today I want to welcome all of you for joining us. I'm really struck by the fact that if Dr. King were still with us right now, he would be turning 92 today. At 92 years old, he would be one of our kupuna right now that we are signing up to make sure that they are vaccinated. And like all the other kupuna in our community who we are eager to see vaccinated because they are emblematic of worthy and courageous lives, whose very presence inspires us to care and to love for one another. If Dr. King were still alive, you can bet he would be right now looking at the pandemic of COVID-19 and the continued epidemic of 1619. And he would be tying them together as clearly as he warned us of the triple threat of racism and economic exploitation and militarism. If he were alive today, he would be looking in disbelief and sadness that the National Mall, stretching from the Capitol building to the Lincoln Memorial, where he delivered that famous speech in the summer of 1963, and where in 2009, a million folks gathered to watch the inauguration of President Barack Obama, where people walked peacefully on a normal day from one Smithsonian to another, and now see that space locked down, fenced in with more than 25,000 National Guardsmen on duty to prevent a repeat of the insurrection attempt of just 12 days ago. He would have seen all of this and would have recognized that the work is not done. Might well have repeated that line that we've heard before, we must accept finite disappointment, but never lose infinite hope. And he would well be glad that as the sun sets on the last time zone of the US, there is a group of folks right here who gather again to honor, as we have done every year since 1986, those who work tirelessly for justice and peace, encouraging one another in the long walk of love, reminding us that darkness cannot drive out darkness, only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that. So today, as we hear again his words, as we sing again the songs that continue to move and inspire us, we also look ahead and celebrate those amongst us, some still not old enough to vote, who are already leading us on the next part of the journey towards justice that the moral arc of the universe bends towards. Let us be gathered this evening in joy, in celebration, and in the spirit of aloha that brings us together today. Let us be gathered.
Tears has been watered, oh, we have come treading our path through the Jim Howell, and I'll lead us in the Litany of Remembrance and Commitment, responsive reading. Today, as we remember and celebrate the life and work of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who gave his life to and for the struggle for civil rights and peace, we recall his words.
I refuse to believe that humanity is so tragically bound to the starless midnight of racism and war that the bright daybreak of peace and brotherhood can never become a reality.
We remember and celebrate his commitment to nonviolence and his belief that humans must meet human conflict with a method that rejects revenge, aggression, and retaliation. The foundation of such method is love. We affirm his vision that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word.
We share the dream that one day all people will be loved and respected as honored children of God, regardless of race, gender, sexual orientation, ability, age, class, or religion.
That one day nations will turn their swords into plowshares and learn war no more.
Tonight we recommit ourselves to the work of justice and peace, that Dr. King's dream of a world filled with justice and peace might one day come.
Aloha, everyone. What a blessing it is to gather together here today. As we lift up the accomplishments and the continued efforts of these young people, these words by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., reflecting on the Selma, Alabama March, serve as a call and a reminder to us all that God's truth is marching alongside them and all of us Our God is marching on. And so as we go away this afternoon, let us go away more than ever before, committed to this struggle and committed to nonviolence. I must admit to you that there are still some difficult days ahead. We are still in for a season of suffering in many of the Black Belt counties of Alabama, many areas of Mississippi, many areas of Louisiana. I must admit to you that there are still jail cells waiting for us and dark and difficult moments. But if we will go on with the faith that nonviolence and its power can transform dark yesterdays into bright tomorrows, we will be able to change all of these conditions. And so I plead with you this afternoon as we go ahead, remain committed to nonviolence. Our aim must never be to defeat or humiliate the white man, but to win his friendship and understanding. We must come to see that the end we seek is a society at peace with itself, a society that can live with its conscience. And that will be a day, not of a white man, not of the Black man. That will be the day of man as man. I know you're asking yourself, how long will it take? Somebody's asking, how long will prejudice blind the visions of men, darken their understanding, and drive bright-eyed wisdom from her sacred throne? Somebody's asking, when will wounded justice, lying prostrate on the streets of Selma and Birmingham and communities all over the South, be lifted from the dust of shame to reign supreme among the children of men? Somebody's asking, when will the radiant star of hope be plunged against the nocturnal bosom of this lonely night, plucked from weary souls with chains of fear and the manacles of death? How long will justice be crucified and truth buried? I come to say to you this afternoon, how difficult the moment, however frustrating the hour, it will not be long. Because truth crushed to earth will rise again. How long? Not long, because no lie can live forever. How long? Not long, because you shall reap what you sow. How long? Not long. Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet that scaffold sways the future, and behind the dim unknown, standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. How long? Not long, because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. How long? Not long, because mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He has loosed his faithful lightning on this terrible swift sword, his truth is marching on. He has sounded forth the trumpet that shall never call retreat. He is sifting out the hearts of men before his judgment seat. Oh, be swift, my soul, to answer him. Be jubilant, my feet. Our God is marching on. Glory, hallelujah. Glory, hallelujah. Glory, hallelujah. His truth is marching on. Let us march on, brothers and sisters. Amen.
Thank you so much, George. So love having you as part of the service, and so love hearing those words. So we are about to be joined. You see Dyson coming on the screen there with me. I'm going to be joined in just a moment with Desiree and Tabitha. And I'm looking forward to being able to introduce these three people to you. So since 1986, Church of the Crossroads has been doing this Martin Luther King celebration. And every year, part of that has been the Peacemaker Award. And some of those, and we saw all those recipients as Let There Be Peace was being sung. And in fact, some of the recipients of the Peacemaker Award are on this Zoom service with us right now. And it's really an honor to have them here with us. As we started contemplating this year, and this year, as somebody said, 2021 actually begins on Wednesday for many people, that we're still in the continuation of 2020, it seems. But as we carry on into this year, we thought, let's look at things a little bit differently. And one of the realities is that, in fact, the work of peace and justice that is happening within our community, the work and peace of justice that all those people that we have honored in the past years have been such a part of, is in very good hands right now, not just with those people who we have honored, but with the next generation. I can confidently say that I feel that we are in probably some of the best hands as we carry forward the work of peace and justice that so many of us on this call have been committed to because of people like Tabitha and Dyson and Desiree who are on the phone. Are on this call with us. So let me introduce them, and then we're going to have just a little bit of a conversation with them and let them share just a little bit about what their visions are and the work that they do. So Dyson that you see there, he's in his first year at KCC. He is studying on an interdisciplinary studies program with political science, communicology, and economics. He is the founder, began this when he was in high school, founder of Project Ocean, working to stop plastic pollution, one of the big movers on Bill 40 that came before the Honolulu City and County banning single-use plastics. He's co-executive director of the Hawaii Youth Climate Coalition. And it was the Hawaii Youth Climate Coalition that helped to organize last fall of 2019, the Youth Climate Strike that had about 2,000 attendees, and it's starting at the state capitol. I've been to lots of climate walks and marches in my time, and never have I seen numbers like we had that day that Dyson and others helped to bring about. So Dyson's with us. We've got Tabitha here, Tabitha Knutson, who's a junior at the University of Hawaii, studying natural resources, environmental management, and another interdisciplinary study. She is the co-director of the Sunrise Movement, the Honolulu Hub. And some of you are probably familiar with the Sunrise Movement, which nationally is hugely responsible for getting climate legislation front and center in the national dialogue. And Tabitha, along with many of the other Sunrisers here in Hawaii, spent much of the last number of months phone banking tirelessly for presidential races, for local races, and for the Senate races in Georgia. And lastly, we have there Desiree, who is a junior at Radford High School, who one day hopes to be studying medicine. I forgot already, Desiree, the field. I apologize there. She is the co-director of Hawaii for Black Lives. Last summer, June 6th, she helped to organize the Black Lives Matter March, which had over 10,000 participants. It was the largest march that I've ever been a part of here in Hawaii, and it was all because of people like Desiree and her friends that helped to organize that. So we are, as I said, in good hands because we have Dyson and Tabitha and Desiree and so many others that are working together to continue this work of peace and justice that so many of you who are part of this service have been on. You three and so many other people represent not just the next generation, though, of activism and justice work in our community, but the three of you are the very heart and soul of what is going on. Identifying new ways of organizing, using social media and technology so effectively, new focuses, new partnerships. And so I can tell you that as one of the four people on this screen, I am the one that is most humbled and most honored to be on this screen with the three of you. So I sent you a couple of questions that I wanted to think about, and I tried to frame them in terms of words that Dr. King has shared with us. So first question is a little bit long, and those of you that attend services at Church of the Crossroads know that that can be part of my way, being a bit long-winded, I apologize. But Dr. King, in his book, Stride to Freedom, which chronicled the Montgomery bus boycott, said, "Human progress is neither automatic nor inevitable. Every step toward the goal of justice requires sacrifice, suffering, and struggle, the tireless exertions and passionate concern of dedicated individuals." So the three of you who are already deeply engaged in this goal of justice that he speaks about, if Dr. King is correct that such progress for all of us requires tireless exertion and passionate concern, How do you see this being lived out in your own lives and in the lives of the many others you work alongside of? So I'm going to ask you all to unmute yourselves and share with us a little bit about that. Feel free to jump in, either one of any one of you.
Go ahead, Desiree. It looks like you're going to talk.
Desiree, yeah.
Oh, I was going to let Tabby talk because she looked like she was ready to go.
I was just going to say, I know for me personally, luckily I've had the privilege to be able to, you know, kind of make activism and advocacy kind of the center of my life, you know, the ability to shape a degree around my field of interest and dedicate almost all of my time to nonprofit organizations. I think that that's definitely like a privilege that I'm very thankful to have. And I think that what Dr. King is saying is absolutely true. But something I've come to realize is that I think I used to kind of take this kind of quote very literally, which is that, you know, if you're not doing the most or if you're not dedicating your entire life to it, it's not enough. But I've realized that, you know, it's important to do what you do in terms of your own capacity and not necessarily compare yourself to someone who has all the time and resources to be able to commit it. And so I think, you know, that quote manifests itself in just the ability to keep these issues in the back of your mind and let them, you know, dictate your decisions a little bit, but also not let them overconsume you, or else you won't be very, you know,
you'll burn yourself out. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Thank you, Tabby. Desiree, Dyson?
I'll go. I guess I really agree with what Tabby said on how, like, some people can't give it their all. Like, they're fortunate enough to go have, like, they're in college, so they're able to commit their degrees to that. I'm not so fortunate. Our school doesn't have, like, a political science area or something like that. So we try to do the best that we can. And sometimes we know that, like, leading advocacy and activism can be time consuming, but we try our best. Like, they're doing so much work and I look up to them, like, just like, wow, like Dyson is leading climate change, Tabby's phone banking. And I just think, like he said, it's like, we have to take the steps to get there. And they're taking the steps that, I mean, we're going to follow in after and try to just like grab what we can. But yeah, I guess the quote manifests itself, like Tabby said, it is just, it's inevitable that it's going to happen. It's a matter of when we can get it done.
Thank you. Thank you, Desiree. Dyson?
Yeah, I mean, both Tabby and Desiree covered about pretty much the one half of what I was going to say, so no need to repeat myself anything there. But on the other end as well, really with Martin Luther King Jr.'s quote there, what comes to mind for me is the work that other people have done. For example, just taking this event. Obviously, you know, we jumped in at 6 o'clock to do preparations. We saw everyone, you know, doing your preparations, doing a run through, making sure everything's working fine. To keep this church running, I'm sure there's a ton of work that David, you and many others here have been doing. And even going before that, right? This day would not exist if it weren't for the actions of Martin Luther King Jr. himself. And so understanding that what we have today, it does require a lot of energy, you know, a lot of time on our end, but it's also built up on other people's energies, other people's sacrifices. And in addition to, I think this is really a call to action as well, right? The way I kind of put it is that a lot of days, especially nowadays, you hear and see a lot of people talking about hope. And hope is important. Don't get me wrong, hope is really important. But if we were all hoping that the COVID-19 pandemic would end, if we were all hoping that racial inequality would end itself, then we're just deluding ourselves. Hope alone is not going to get us anywhere. What we need to follow up on that hope is action. And that's what this quote really helps to hone in, is that hope is important, hope is critical, but if we don't have action to follow up that hope, we've hit a dead end.
Thank you, Dyson. Thank you, Tabby. Thank you, Desiree. I'm gonna jump to the next question. And I really appreciate that. I appreciate that, you know, I don't know who said the quote, we stand on the shoulders of the giants who have gone before us. But we also stand side by side with folks that are in the struggles with you. And I love the fact that that you all are emphasizing, you know, we can't do it all the time. And we need to be able to step back and honor one another for the contributions that we make. One of the things that, you know, in the conversation that we've had together is I was really struck by the emphasis that the three of you have put on the word intersectionality. It's a word that, frankly, I don't think I had heard a whole lot of until the last couple of years, and yet it's been around for a while. And I'm really struck by that concept of intersectionality. It reminds me a lot of Dr. King's quote of injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And so I'm wondering if the three of you might share with us just a bit about the ways you see in which all work towards justice intersects together, and what helps you to not lose this focus of working together and sort of get siloed into your own thing. And I'll let any one of you jump in there.
I guess I'll start. So with us, all three of our organizations kind of have the same end goal of social and racial justice, whether it's climate, because we have to live on this earth for the rest of our lives. And if we're putting it in jeopardy 24/7, how are we gonna make it like habitable for anybody else? Or with the Sunrise Movement, they're constantly calling and phone banking, trying to get politicians in that can help make us propel our actions into what we need. And ours is just racial and social justice. So we're feeding off of what their energy is kind of giving us, and we help each other promote. And I feel like if what our thing of not getting overlapped with each other is that we all kind of know our boundaries and we don't overstep. So we all kind of work together. And yeah, it's just working together, because all of our leaders have talked all the time. So it's not like we're just going in there blindly and saying, well, we don't know what they're doing, or they might be doing something and the two of our groups are doing two different things. It's all kind of communication that we're working with.
Yeah, building on what Desiree said, I mean, for us really at HYCC, we take it from nature. I mean, right, the living world has been around for around 3.5 billion years. So you figure it's a pretty sturdy template to work off of. And so in nature, it's not like, oh, you know, here's one ecosystem, here's another over here, and they don't at all touch each other. No, it's not just a bunch of loops working on their own. It's a giant web, a giant sphere of intersected ecosystems. Right. If I'm a peacock, I'm not actually a peacock, I'm human, but if I'm a peacock and, you know, I go about my life, ultimately that peacock doesn't only impact other peacocks. It's impacting a ton of other things in the ecosystem. And it works the same way with organizations, or that's the way it should work, is that we all impact each other, and those impacts can be positive. They can even be negative impacts. And like Desiree was saying, if we work together and we're in constant communication, we can help to uplift each other rather than trample each other trying to be the first one to the top. So that's really how it works. Or at least that's nice. The way the three of us see it.
Thank you, Dyson. Tabby?
I think that the part of this quote like really reminded me about kind of how activism is being formed right now. I think that's something that's really unique for this time, is that conversations about systemic issues is really coming to the forefront. So really like complex ideas such as like capitalism you know, like systemic racism or all of these other concepts are coming to the forefront, and we're really seeing how a lot of our issues are intersected. So like environmental injustices are able to happen because of a lack of government or an industry responsibility. And that's the same reason why there's racial injustices, of course, like with other things, and et cetera, et cetera. And so I think we're seeing a time and participating in a time right now that's just recognizing that there's a big issue bigger than, you know, these smaller ones, I guess. And so understanding that the best way to combat that is through collaboration and, you know, understanding that we're all working towards the same thing, and understanding that in order to attain a sustainable and equitable future, we need everything to be changed.
Thank you. You know, one of the realities that I'm aware of is one of the things that you all do so effectively is in that intersectional work is the way you utilize technology, social media, and all to stay connected and communicating with one another. And, you know, we were commenting before you came on, we're 10 months into doing Zoom worship services for old farts like us, that it was so intimidating 10 months ago to think about being online and doing this. And it's become now, I wouldn't say it's become second nature, but we're really beginning to understand the ways the technology is useful, and something that you all are is more second nature to you, and what that has allowed you to do is that connections in deeper ways, and I'm just so grateful for that. I'm so grateful that at this moment in our time we're seeing these things come together. All right, last question for the three of you. You know, in Dr. King's most famous speech, the I Have a Dream speech there in 1963 on the National Mall in front of the Lincoln Memorial, he said, I have a dream this afternoon about my four little children, that they will come up in this, not in the same young days that I came up with him, but they will be judged on the basis of the content of their character, not the color of their skin. When the three of you consider our shared future, not just your shared future with one another, but the generations that come behind you and the generations that are in front of you, when you consider that shared future, what is the dream? What is the vision that drives you forward in order to act and continue to act?
I guess personally, my dream is that everyone has an equal playing field. They can go in for a job and not be judged on their appearance, and they can be judged on their qualifications, and not like it's just an equal playing ground, whether it's a job or housing, because housing is a big problem. There's poverty, and there's people that can be lifted out of poverty if the jobs were accessible to them and it wasn't biased. And I just, equality for all, like I said before, just for everyone to benefit from the system instead of the system being against people. Yeah, that's just my hope for the future, and I hope we can reach a point to where that is not only a dream but a reality.
Thank you. I agree. Dyson, Tabby?
Sure. I mean, Desiree said it, but I mean, really, if, to put in the shortest way possible, what we're striving for is a future that's just, equitable, and resilient.
I think resilient is a great term. I was going to say, like an equitable, sustainable future where everyone has access to a safe and secure life. I'd really like to see where, you know, the bottom line is brought up to a decent level, where that everyone can be content and healthy and well there. And also I'd like to see an environment where any sort of like negative thing that happens is not because of humans. I think that would be the goal.
You mean like an asteroid or something like that?
Yeah,
instead of
or like
us,
natural
right?
disasters, like tsunamis. I can't control that, but like, I don't want us to be the source of any more harm or pain or suffering.
That's really wonderful. Thank you. You know, I'm really sorry that. I'm really grateful that you all are joining us on Zoom. I'm really sorry that we are not together physically, because I can tell you this, is that when the service would be over and we would walk from the sanctuary at Crossroads across the way to our meeting hall, Weaver Hall, you three would be inundated with folks that would be surrounding you and wanting to say thank you, wanting to ask you questions, wanting to get contact information from you to get so that that we can learn from you. I am grateful. I am moved. I am honored. I am humbled. And so thank you. Thank you for being with us tonight. Thank you for the work that you have been doing. We're about to see a song compilation and some slides of some of the work that Desiree helped to pull together at the Black Lives Matter March. last June. And thank you for the work that is in front of you and the way that you are going to contribute in the way in which you work together. So I'm going to ask all the folks that are around to raise your hands. If you know how to raise your hand and the reactions, you can put them up there and thank you. And I would give you elbow bumps and fist bumps and everything else. But I love Chrissy puts on their Imua leaders of today and tomorrow. So thank you, three of you. And thank you for being with us.
Good evening, everyone. It is our tradition to receive an offering each year at this event. The recipients of the offering are designated by those we honor. Tonight's offering will be shared among Hawaii for Black Lives, Sunrise Movement Honolulu Hub, and Hawaii Youth Climate Coalition. There are several ways that you can donate. You can write a check, and Kahu David is going to put into the chat the address for the church and for our website and our email address. You can donate by sending a check to the Church of the Crossroads. And please, in the memo line, write MLK so that your offering is designated to the right place. Or you can donate online through our website. If you donate through the website, please send an email to the church, because our website doesn't have the capacity to designate. So if you donate through our website, please send an email to the church so that we will know that your donation was intended for the MLK recipients. So I want to thank you in advance for your generous giving this evening. Your donations will support the work of these amazing young activists and their dream, their vision. What they have told us they're working for is a sustainable, equitable future that is resilient and where everyone is safe and secure in their lives. So thank you to them, and thank you for your gifts.
Thank you, Linda. Tabitha, Dyson, Desiree, thank you so much for joining us. And really, it's not just, we know it, the three of you represent organizations that you work with, and many other organizations that you work with. That is not just the three of you, that is really hundreds of people. And you know, we refer to you as these young people and all of that, and that's because you are much younger than so many of us here. But the truth of the matter is you are already the leaders in our community, and we are so very grateful for that. I look at the rest of the folks that are on the screen here, and the contributions that so many have made, people whose lives were shaped by the words of Dr. King when we were growing up, people whose lives were shaped by the ways in which they have allowed themselves to be engaged in a struggle for justice and struggle for peace, and to not let that struggle overwhelm them, but to instead be fed by the spirit of one another, be fed by the spirit of the divine as we understand it within ourselves, and to allow ourselves to be shaped and therefore give of our lives. Dr. King, in one of his speeches, said these words, which may be the most appropriate words for us to think about at this time, particularly as we go into days in which we work through struggles and troubles that have been upon us, as we look to new days that we can help to create. He says, use me, God. Show me how to take who I am, who I want to be, and what I can do, and use it for a purpose greater than myself. So it's in that spirit that we gather ourselves together and we prepare to close our time together. In that spirit in which we look to one another and we look to God to use us, to allow us to be a vehicle, a vessel of peace, a vessel of justice, to be able to work into this world, to share the aloha that we have, and to work for a purpose that is greater than ourselves. Mahalo to all of you who are here, to the work that you have done. Mahalo, Tabitha and Dyson and Desiree, for the work that you are engaged in and the work that will shape your life from this day forward in the ways in which we can partner together with you. Mahalo indeed for this moment and this time. Let us stay united and together in the struggle. Let us go forth and listen now as we go into our final song of gathering, in which we recall we shall indeed overcome.
We shall overcome. We shall.
Well, happy Martin Luther King Day, everybody. Wonderful to be with you all. Tyson, Desiree, Tabby, thank you so much for joining us and everyone else who had a part in this service. Blessings, everyone. Have a chance to talk with each other before we head off. Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much for having us. Thank you, Dyson, Tabitha, and Desiree.